Jim Packard sitting in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us this morning. We're going to discuss all things political, analyzing news reports from last week in advance of primary elections next week in Indiana and North Carolina. Our guests are Margie Hershey, professor of political science at Indiana University in Bloomington, and George Rabinowitz, Burton Cragg professor of political science at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I believe that Margie Hershey is with us on this line. Hi, Margie.
Hi.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And on the guest line, we have Professor Rabinowitz, and thank you for calling in today. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Nice to be on the show.
And just looking at your vitae, I see that Margie got her Ph.D. at the University of Wisconsin in those halcyon days of 1972. You must have been here for the Vietnam festivities.
Quite a bit of excitement, yes.
Yes. And Professor Rabinowitz got his at Michigan, University of Michigan, which makes the two of you colleagues in a way.
Most definitely.
All right. As the news reports ended last week, it said that Senator Obama had a slight lead in the polls in both of your states. Margie, is that true in Indiana?
Well, that's a good question. We really weren't being polled for quite a while, and we have very few poll data to draw upon as a result. I'm not really sure at this point whether or not the polls that we see now are accurate, because in several other big state polls that we've seen during the primary season in California, in Ohio, and Pennsylvania, Senator Clinton seemed to have a pretty substantial lead. Senator Obama seemed to be closing fairly quickly. And then just when you'd think that the election would be fairly close, at the end, Senator Clinton has pulled out a reasonable lead. That kind of makes you suspicious of whether or not Senator Clinton's full support is showing up in the polls. So the last few polls have shown them to be close, but I'm wondering if that's really accurate.
And what does the situation look like there in North Carolina?
I think here it's looking more favorable for Obama. I think, again, it could be that some of the early polls which showed him a huge lead are exaggerating the advantage, but I think he does have a solid lead here, and it's likely to hold up through the election.
Well, let me ask each of you this question. Why has Senator Obama been unable to win over enough working class and white voters to wrap up the Democratic nomination? And Margie, let me start with you.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that this is a demographic that Senator Clinton would do well in. I think the real question for me is even beyond whether or not a particular group favors Senator Obama or Senator Clinton, is whether or not they would be willing to accept the other one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one or the other obviously is going to get the nomination, and it may be that for a number of groups, although they may have a slight preference for one of the two candidates, it may not be a deal breaker for them to vote Democratic in the fall. So I'm not altogether sure that the contest is as much a serious one-on-one battle as it's been portrayed. I think it's clear that most Democrats are perfectly happy to have either one as the nominee.
And George, your thoughts?
My thoughts are that they're both very strong candidates, and basically she starts with a lot of strength that comes from how much people like the administration of her husband. It was one of the few administrations in many of their lifetimes where the white working class voter actually showed progress, and it was true also of black working class voters. And I think that when people reflect, very consistent with what Marjorie was saying, that they're going to be looking at a Democratic candidate versus a Republican candidate. Now, if as the more likely event occurs and Obama is the candidate, he's going to be an African-American candidate. And for some voters, that's going to be an obstacle. For
mm-hmm.
many voters, it won't be an obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very hard to get a good handle on things when you have what really are two exceptionally gifted candidates. I think people understate how strong these two are compared to the more recent candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I think both are decidedly better on the stump, better handling themselves with the media, and better at kind of presenting their ideas than either Gore or Kerry were.
So, I think that's remarkable, really, especially in the case of Obama. Given that he is really pretty recent to major roles in American politics, I think a lot of people were waiting to see him make some rookie mistakes as he was campaigning, to see him say more things like the recent little bit over his discussion of small town and rural voters being bitter about their economic situations, and he hasn't, and I think that's really amazing. Clinton, of course, as she has said herself, has been put to the test many, many, many times over the course of the last 20 years, but Obama has shown himself to be an unusually strong candidate for somebody who has not been tested so much by the national media.
We're talking about all things political with Margie Hershey, a professor of political science at Indiana University, and George Rabinowitz, a Burton Craig professor of political science at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And if you'd like to join this conversation about presidential politics, all you have to do is give us a call. We're using the Madison numbers, Madison 263-1890, elsewhere 800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. The other question we used to lead off with is the Democratic Party hesitating about race as it moves to the brink of nominating an African-American to be president. And let me reverse this. And, George, pick that up first, would you, please?
Yeah, I think that it's tricky in the United States because race is a factor. I think it's more a factor by age and generation. I think for the oldest voters, it's likely to be more consequential than for the younger voters. And one of the unusual features of this campaign is how when you look at Clinton and Obama support, it tends to have a much stronger age-related component than the typical election, and certainly the typical primary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is the ease with which the younger generation handles race and doesn't see it as quite as significant as the older generation does. I'm sure that if Obama is the nominee, there will be some voters who will not vote for him on the basis of race. But I don't think it's going to be very substantial. And I think it's going to be largely age-related. And we'll see. You know, I would say if I had to guess, and it's a bit of a heavy encumbrance, even if it's a fairly small number, but his vote would probably be depressed somewhere between 3 and 5%.
Conversely, though, are there some people who would not vote for a woman if Senator Clinton is the nominee of the Democratic Party?
There's certainly lots of evidence that some people are hesitant to vote for women. I would say, all things being equal, that gender is likely to be less of an obstacle than race, although both will be an obstacle. So if I was guessing 3 to 5% based on race, I would guess something like 1 to 3% based on gender.
And Margie?
I think that's absolutely right, and I think it's particularly interesting to see that we may or may not get a good indicator of this from the polls so far. For a long time, there has been what some have referred to as the Tom Bradley effect, the time when former mayor of Los Angeles, Tom Bradley, ran for governor of California. He's a black man, and was widely regarded by commentators, given poll results, as being the winner of the race before it happened. And then as it turned out, he lost. The phenomenon was explained as racial leakage, that there's a certain percentage of people who will respond to a pollster's questions and say that they will vote for a particular particular candidate who's black, who is of their party. And then when they get into the privacy of the voting booth, they express their true feelings, which is they vote against that candidate. One of my colleagues, Jerry Wright, had found that there was a national poll that had done an experiment recently to see whether or not the people who were actually tapped by the pollsters were good representatives of the sample that was drawn as a whole, because response rates to polls have been going down recently, and some people have been suspicious that that means polls are not as reflective of the character of the population as a whole. And they found that once they really pursued those folks who did not respond initially to the pollsters, there was only one major difference between them, and that was that the harder-to-find respondents were much more, well, substantially more likely to express their bigotry toward African Americans than the group that had been polled. So it isn't necessarily that people are lying to pollsters, but that it seems to be harder for the pollsters to pick up on this part of the population that feels comfortable saying, no, I would not vote for an African American for president. So we still don't really know what that percentage is going to be. I suspect George is right in the percentage that he's suggested, but we're going to find out.
Mm-hmm. We're just about a week away from finding that out. Margie Hershey and George Rabinowitz are our guests today, and we'll take some calls, and we're going to start with Jim in Milwaukee, and I'll just caution the listeners that you're calling in and you'll be on a same telephone line as one of our guests. So I'll be dropping you off after you ask your question. And we'll start with Jim in Milwaukee. Hello, Jim. What's on your mind this morning?
Yeah, hi. There may be some hard feelings among Democrats as a result of the primary, but I think the thing that'll bring them together is the understanding of how nasty the Republicans are and how they play the game. And to detail this, I'd like to cite a blog from the Texas Hold'em blogger, which appeared in the Sunday Milwaukee Journal editorial page. And it says, I wholeheartedly endorse Operation Chaos, Rush Limbaugh's attempt to extend the bitter, nasty primary battle between the Hildebeest and Barack Hussein Obama. Getting Republicans to re-register as Democrats and then vote for shrillery to keep the race alive is a stroke of genius. Basically, all the McCain and campaign and the RNC have to do is repackage Hillary's commercials from Pennsylvania as their own and then run them again. The more chaos, the better. And this just illustrates how dirty, to me, how dirty the Republicans are and how they play the game. And I think as people realize that, they'll come together and support the Democratic nominee.
George, have you seen the commercials or the reference that he's referring to of Rush Limbaugh asking for riots to be incited in Denver? George Rabinowitz? I hope we haven't lost our guest. We'll get Carmen to call him back. And Tom in Brooklyn, let's go ahead and take your call next. Hi.
Tom in Burlington.
Burlington, yes, go ahead.
I have several things I'd like to say, so when I'm finished, I'll say it's the end, and then you can cut me off so you can get the other person on the line or something. I understand you have a different kind of setup here on this show. What I believe is we're witnessing a typical deadlocked convention, and I've announced on your show a year ago that I was running for president, and my qualifications were that I grew up in Congress, I was a page in Washington, and I met most of the presidents since President Truman. My father was a member of Congress. He passed the first civil rights bill in America in the 20th century, and that was the 1957 Civil Rights Act that allowed African Americans to apply and get federal jobs. This was a watershed bill that went through Congress, and my dad put it through. But I never wanted to be president or anything like that. I studied economics at Georgetown University, and what impressed me about being a page in Washington was most of the members of Congress are lawyers. They don't know anything about economics. When Clinton went to school, I believe he studied political science. And no offense to your two guests, all three of the candidates, Mr. McCain, Clinton, and Obama, they studied political science. They really don't understand anything about economics. And for the last year, we have lost 1 million homes have gone into foreclosure while they were running around the country saying they're going to be a leader in this and leader in that. And then we're scheduled to lose another 2 million homes. Now, my feeling is this. I am a pro-life Democrat. There are 45% of Americans are pro-life Democrats. I could not run as a pro-life Democrat and expect to get the Democratic nomination. I need pro-life Democrats and pro-life Republicans to win the presidency. And the numbers are basically in my favor because out of the last 40 years, there have only been 1.5 Democratic presidents who have been elected. So, and the elections are they're fought in maybe 6 or 7 states. So if I go to the Democratic convention and say to them, listen, if you want a Democratic president, you have to look in my direction here because I will either take it or you'll lose it on your own. And so I'm out there, and my website is called President Boyle. You can Google it. It's getting more and more hits on the internet. But it's a real for me. It's been a real eye opener. I studied.
Tom, we've got to wrap this up.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Wisconsin Public Radio has helped me because I'm a very shy person and I don't like to speak in public. So thank you.
All right, Tom. Thank you so much. And I believe we've got Professor Rabinowitz back with us again.
We do.
We do indeed. I apologize for knocking you off there. We're talking with Margie Hershey, who's a professor of political science at Indiana University in Bloomington, and George Rabinowitz, Burton Craig professor of political science at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And we'll take more of your calls, and we'll talk more about presidential politics in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard sitting in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us today as we talk about all things political. And we'll go back to the phones, take another call. That would be Steve in Marinette. Steve, what's on your mind today?
The thing I'm talking about is the bitterness that Obama talked about. I haven't seen anybody in media talk to small-town people and ask them why they're bitter or if they really are, and we are. I mean, I can start talking to somebody, and within 2 minutes, if anybody brings up anything political, we're very bitter. But the one thing that's really frustrating to me, and I'm sure would be to any Democrat, is people hanging on to their guns. If the NRA tells people to vote for a Republican, they do it, no matter whether anything else related to that Republican has anything good to do with them. Same thing with religion. Pro-life, pro-choice. They vote Republican if they're pro-life, most of them, not our last person that called in, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But they totally ignore everything else that that person stands for and represents and doesn't do a good thing at all for them. That's my take on small-town bitterness.
Steve, thank you very much for your comment. Let me ask Margie about a response to that.
Well, it sounds like Senator Obama has a fan out there in this now three-way race rather than two-way race for the Democratic nomination. I think that what happens when you get to a race that extends this long is simply that both candidates are looking for any possible opportunity to obviously gain advantage, and Senator Obama did make one of those rookie mistakes in saying some things to an audience that he considered to be very friendly that wouldn't turn out so well in the national media. But I think the remarkable thing is that he's made so few of those to this point. And when you think about it, although of course it's possible to enlarge almost any tiny comment into a major policy question, it's amazing that this few little gaffes have come out at the race at this point. With respect to the first commenter, Jim, I believe, if you're concerned about negative campaigning, hang on, because it's going to happen on both sides. In 2006, the party's independent spending was predominantly negative and very substantial, and about 75 or 80% of the Democrats ads were negative, and close to 90 or 95% of the Republicans. The reason is it works. It gets out voters. It generates enthusiasm for the candidate who is not being attacked. And that, I'm afraid, is going to be a given no matter who it is who wins the nomination.
George Rabinowitz, let me ask you this. One of Hillary Clinton's strong positions is that she's ready from day one. And is it ready to do battle? Is it ready to, you know, keep up the same sort of fight that has been going on for the last few years of the Bush administration? Or is it possible that we can overcome these political difficulties with a different message from a different candidate?
Well, her ready on day one doesn't, in her mind, mean that she's ready to fight, but ready to start a set of actions to establish a new policy dynamic. I think in terms of the general level of hostility in Washington, it certainly is the case that it has been a phenomena that has grown starting in the late 80s. It actually started before then, but it really picked up in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was really a vehicle for the Republican Party to establish itself as a truly competitive party with the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans have an advantage in that there are people in the electorate, more people in the electorate, who identify themselves as being conservative than liberal. And you notice that a lot of the heated rhetoric is very symbolic in nature and goes with, I'm a conservative, I stand for some basic principles. Often these are moral principles. And it's been a very critical aspect of the political dynamic that if it's kind of smooth, where everybody is not too critical of their opposition, it advantaged the Democratic Party, who had so many more people who are themselves identifying with as Democrats. Now that balance has become more even, and largely because of the very forceful way the Republicans have presented their case. As long as there's real advantage to one party or the other to present a more divisive message, that's going to occur. Now, the extent to which a particular candidate, if you take Obama's message, it's a much more, we're going to be open, we're not going to play this highly divisive game versus Clinton, I'm ready to not only act on day one, I'm ready to fight on day one. I think it remains to be seen, with a more even balance between the parties and with the country kind of looking for some changes. I don't think the divisiveness can be shut off, because it helps certain partisan interests more than others, but I think it certainly can be ameliorated.
One of the things that kind of interested me about the Pennsylvania campaign, Margie Hershey, was that in the exit polls, you found that 7 out of 10 of the voters wanted change, and yet the winner was not necessarily the change candidate.
Well, one of the challenges we face with polls is that we know what box people checked on the survey, but we don't know what they meant by that.
Now,
it does seem a little bit implausible, because at least for my students at Indiana University, every president they have ever experienced since the beginning of their lives was named either Clinton or Bush.
Mm-hmm.
A little hard to set Senator Clinton out as the change candidate in that case, but perhaps some of the respondents were thinking about change from the Republicans or change from President Bush, and for that, I suppose you could argue that Senator Clinton certainly is a pretty marked change.
Let's go take some phone calls again, and we'll go to Pat in Richland Center. Pat, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Say, when we talk about presidential races, maybe we should keep in mind, too, that it's been demonstrated that the votes aren't always counted like they're supposed to be, you know, and I don't know if that's changed. But has it ever seemed to your guest that these prolonged presidential campaigns are really designed to distract folks so that we don't actually address, you know, trying to come up with solutions for serious problems we face, and also to lower expectations of both the candidates and the electorate itself? And By that I mean lower expectations of our fellow citizens, because of all of our differences, like your guests are saying, all the differences that us Americans have, so we can't get do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. George, why don't you pick up on that tag?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I would say it certainly, I don't see any intent in there. I think that these long campaigns have evolved in a very natural way, really starting in the 60s, and certainly amplified after 1968, when the primary system became the main way of selecting candidates. And that arose, as I'm sure your caller knows, because there was so much controversy over the nomination of Hubert Humphrey by the Democrats in the midst of the Vietnam War. The lowering of expectations, I don't think that's the intent either. That basically some of this lowering of expectations has occurred because this has been so dragged out. And it's been dragged out as long as it has because the Democratic rules are constructed to try and seem fair, to allow a variety of candidates to really state their case. And this is an exceptional year where normally the winnowing process would have winnowed down to one candidate at this point, but now we have two, and the fact that the two are competing so aggressively, and with the negativity that's a natural part of that, the expectations surely are being lowered, but I don't think it was by intent, and I don't think it really is a design feature. It's an offshoot of the process.
Margie Hershey, let me ask you about money. I understand that Senator Clinton's campaign is either in the red or slightly above, while Senator Obama has a campaign war chest of more than $40 million to spend. What do you expect the money factor to make in the next few months?
Well, I think that people who make the assumption that the more money you have, the more likely you are to win, have to be cautious because of the fact that Senator Obama has outspent Senator Clinton in most of the big primaries in the last month or so and has lost in big states. He outspent Senator Clinton by almost 3-1 in Pennsylvania and still lost by 10 percentage points. So, yes, he definitely is ahead in money, and I think he can definitely make the argument that he has had a tremendous number of small donors, which has been different from the Clinton campaign, which has relied a bit more on people who can come closer to the maximum $2,300 contribution per election, mm-hmm. and that indicates broader-based support than Senator Clinton has. But whether or not it will help him, often we find that the candidate who has less experience, less name recognition, less support initially needs to raise a lot more money in order to overcome the advantages that the front runner has started out with. And so perhaps that has helped Senator Obama stay competitive, but not obviously to pull ahead.
Let's go to Ben in Eau Claire next. Hi, Ben. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Dan in Eau Claire.
Yes.
I just wanted to mention, we've got two lawyers running that are married to lawyers, and we've got a war hero with a good-looking wife that owns a beer distributorship. Is anyone getting this? McCain's going to win this in a walk. We elect warriors to make peace in this country. We don't elect peacemakers. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. George, your response to the war hero versus lawyers.
Did you ask me?
Yes, I did.
That's another unusual question. But I think with regard to war heroes, Kerry was a war hero. Clearly, we didn't elect him. Maybe the real thrust of the question is we elect people who tend to be more hard-nosed with regard to foreign policy than soft. It's certainly the huge war hero that is the best exemplar of somebody who was very soft in terms of his own foreign policy was McGovern, who had this incredible war record, and yet he never even ran on it.
That's
so it's
true.
Interesting what the warrior record is, and it's very uneven. Dole is another example of a candidate with a great war record who didn't succeed at the polls. Now, I think the thrust that warriors beat diplomats is there's some truth to that basically people, especially when they feel threatened, are more comfortable with a harder-edged politician. And I think that's something the Democrats are going to have to confront. How are they going to provide safety for the country? But the idea that McCain is going to move in as a shoo-in candidate, I think, is that doesn't fit well with what we as political scientists know.
Mark,
do you want
no,
want
go
to
ahead.
Say anymore?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, with a weak economy and with people very upset about the war and how it's been conducted, I think he's very much on an uphill battle. And I think either the Democrats is going to recognize that they have to do something to convince the country they're going to try and keep it safe.
And let's go to Zach in Green Bay next. Hi, Zach.
Good morning. I just wanted to address the question as to why Senator Obama has not been able to close the deal, so to speak, in several states. I think the reasons are as follows. Number one, the omnipresent right-wing media on the radio and on cable television. Number two, you've got the mainstream media, which is on the one hand very content to ignore major, major issues, including the environment, health care, trade issues, and workers' rights, but are more than happy to just run with contrived issues such as the elitism, the so-called elitism of Senator Obama, and the 20 to 30 second sound bites of Reverend Wright, which by association are meant to define Senator Obama. So, you know, the mainstream corporate news media doesn't want depth, doesn't want context, doesn't want an effort to encourage or doesn't want to affect thoughtfulness in the debate. And basically, it's my opinion that they are pursuing political sabotage against Senator Obama, not because he's black, but possibly because he may want to actually change things.
Zach, thank you very much. And Margie, response to that?
Well, I think Zach is very right in characterizing the emphasis of the media on scandal, on what people who are very concerned about politics might consider irrelevancies, but I don't think it's for the reason that he suggests. I don't think that in many cases media coverage is especially interested in which candidate wins. I think it's mostly interested in selling newspapers and selling airtime, excluding public radio from this. And I think that's perfectly understandable because these are businesses. They have to survive. They have to make a profit. And the way that they do that is not normally by having big headlines that say, here is the real truth about the nature of the Federal Reserve Bank and interest rates and the mortgage crisis. But it's Senator Obama is called an elitist or some other scandal has occurred. And that's because most of the audience, which is, as Pogo would say, us, is just more likely to read articles like that. We're just more likely to pay attention to the more so-called human aspects of the candidates than we are to the tougher, more complicated, much more boring to many people, major issues of the day.
One of the things that always amazed me is that the amount of attention that was paid to Senator Obama's missing flag pin when no one ever suggests that Senator Clinton shouldn't wear one on her pantsuit.
These are symbolic issues. They're
yes, they
people
are.
Using one thing to stand for something else. An awful lot of us are not very concerned about politics day to day. Most Americans are not. That's one of the luxuries we have of being a longstanding democracy. We don't have to fear quite so much that we will dissolve into something else in a very short time. But as a result, most people are not accustomed to spending a lot of time evaluating complex policy issues. They don't have a separate category in their brain for politics for evaluating people. They evaluate candidates very much the way they evaluate a new neighbor or somebody that they meet at a at a dinner. And as long as that's the case, people are going to be more responsive to these more symbolic, flashier kinds of questions. And candidates are well aware of that, which is why, although they certainly spend a lot of time talking about major policy issues, probably their major concern is not to be caught with one of these symbolic questions, like whether or not they're wearing particular jewelry that has an American flag on it.
We're talking with Margie Hershey, professor of political science at Indiana University in Bloomington, and George Rabinowitz, Burton Craig professor of political science at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, talking about all things political. And we'll take more of your calls in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kathleen Dunn has the day off. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for her on the Ideas Network, and we're talking about all things political. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Elsewhere, toll free at 800-642-1234. And I'd remind you again that when you do call in, you'll be sharing the line with one of our callers, and so I'll drop you off at the end of your question. Let's go to Tom in Littleshute next. Hi, Tom. What's on your mind today?
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Good. One of the things that I've been wondering about is the seeming lack of interest in defining what candidate Obama means when he says he's for change. And I see a lot of signs being held up at his rallies, change, but no one seems interested in asking what he means by that. And it seems, too, that in one glaring example of how this is not being addressed is of how Obama himself is not addressing change is in the racial issue. And I have to go back to Reverend Wright about that. And I've just wondered and asked other people if they can define for me what sort of positive message is coming out of a message like Reverend Wright's when he is on the stump and screaming as he is that blacks are being discriminated against and don't trust the white man and GD America, et cetera, and wondering, I guess, if he's going to make any kind of a positive impact on that, why is he not speaking more toward mending racial fences? McCain was chastised for knowing a person who made a single remark. It wasn't McCain's pastor or anything of that nature. McCain didn't sit in his church for 20 years as Obama did with Reverend Wright, but McCain was being hung out to dry for one remark that was made by somebody that he knows a little bit, I guess. Whereas no one in the mainstream media, except if you listen to any right-wing radio, they'll make an issue of it there, but no one in the mainstream media seems to want to say anything other than, well, you know, we can't associate Obama with anything that Reverend Wright says. But I guess my main point is, if Obama is seriously interested in change, then why doesn't he start at something as rudimentary as race by just simply saying, no, that's not the message that America needs to hear. If we're going to act as a united people, we need to move away from people like Reverend Wright instead of the same old racist issues that have been pounced on by the likes of Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, et cetera, for many, many years, and which have done nothing to forward the for the benefit of black people everywhere. So why
don't you pick up on the question of change?
There are several aspects.
There were several
question,
aspects to the question.
I think change is certainly something that Obama has talked about. If you think about changes, you have change in the war policy, you have change in economic policy, you have broad-scale change in how the government starts to provide services to people, most critically is medical care. One of the things that both the candidates are promising are big political changes in terms of policy. Obama is also trying to indicate he will present a change in tone. And whether he can succeed in that, we have discussed a little bit before, but it certainly is his view that politics does not have to be as conflictual as it's been the last 20 years. Now, with regard to the race issue, Obama gave quite an extensive speech that was very well received generally about the role of race in the society and how it is, in the end, fairly destructive to the well-being of the society and how we do have to work together as people of different backgrounds and different ethnicities to be a coherent whole. So I think that this is basically not reflective of the exact message that Obama has been putting out. And finally, with regard to Reverend Wright, I think he's recently had an extensive interview himself with Bill Moyers. He has given a speech last night to a largely black audience, which was a much more constructive speech and very much as some of McCain's and some of Obama's and some of Clinton's statements have been taken out of context, I think it is absolutely the case that Reverend Wright has been treated much more harshly than his broad record would support. So if you take one or two or three sermons out of many sermons from a church which is largely serving an African-American community and which occasionally is most ministerial, as most ministers do, and is really an important ministerial function, which is to alert people to problems, to moral problems associated with their lives and with governance, and that occasionally means being very critical. I think it's really been another case where it has been convenient to focus on these very negative elements of Wright's message and bypass a whole lot of the message which was more positive. And certainly, with regard to Obama, he's really taken on the race issue.
In regard to McCain and his requesting an endorsement from a controversial preacher, I don't recall his name, but the gentleman who just called referred to him. Is it on the same balance? Is it the same weight given to that request for an endorsement from someone?
I would say not. Clearly, this is not a ministry that McCain has attended. On the other hand, I think that in either case, politicians generally want endorsements, and then when the endorser tends to be somebody who is more controversial, they could get cold feet. But I think in both cases, this is really a case where the use of the minister by the opposition is a little bit out of sync with the real importance to how the candidate will conduct themselves in office.
And to Al in La Crosse next. Al, what's on your mind?
Hi. Well, a brief comment and then a question. The comment is, the perfect segue is the word context. And the context of John McCain as so-called war hero is that he was bombing civilian targets in the north when he was shot down. And so the context in the United States is often lost. And the context currently, which changes the way people can and do and should see things. But in the context in terms of Latin America, where I'm most familiar with issues, personally from Central America primarily, there is zero effort by any candidate that I've seen to discuss with any level of discussion at all our relations with any country in Latin America. I mean, this is a major trading partner. There's some political differences with Venezuela, but certainly Chavez has been a major help to his own people. By and large, there's this endless embargo against Cuba that needs to be dealt with that should be ended, in my opinion. There's political murders still happening in Guatemala. There's U.S. machinations in Nicaragua that are still going on. There is the total destabilization of Honduras at the hands of the U.S. And I just think that the question is, why is there not any context, any effort, any political discussion by any of these candidates to deal with these things until there is what I would call a manufactured crisis that happens in one of these countries, where some political leader somewhere gets us upset and then we get all involved. But meanwhile, there is just zero discussion about any of these other efforts.
All right.
There is no discussion whatsoever. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you. Margie, would you like to discuss why we don't talk about events in Latin America?
Sure. I think that one important point that comes out of this is that one element of the context that we have no clue about with regard to the fall election is what's going to happen in foreign affairs between now and November. It's a political lifetime between now and the time of the election. And should something major happen in Iraq or in some other part of the world that is perceived as threatening American security, that would certainly affect the dynamics of the campaign. As to why we don't discuss Central America and Latin America more in campaigns, there have been some interesting findings in political science research about the extent to which each of us has the tendency to feel that our priorities must, by definition, be everybody else's priorities, that each of us expects that the things that are most important to us are also important to everybody else. But in fact, clearly that couldn't be true. It couldn't logically be true. And we know that with regard to foreign policy, a lot of Americans are not very concerned, not very aware of what happens in most foreign policy issues. If they're aware of any, perhaps it might have to do with Iraq and a few other parts of the world. But campaigns, as much as we might like them to reflect our major concerns and to educate the public, are really about the candidate wanting to win. And that means the candidate addressing the issues that most people are concerned about. And candidates can read the same polls that you and I can and discover that for most people, Central America and Latin America, no matter how genuinely important to our foreign policy, are just not breakfast table issues for most people.
To Marty in Green Bay, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The gentleman that called in earlier, the reverend that he was trying to remember was Hagee, who was
Hagee.
Way off the wall. He said that the only reason that New Orleans was flooded was because there was going to be a homosexual parade there. And John McCain embraced him and said, I'm glad to have his endorsement. I think the media has gone way out of their way to pick on Barack and not, you know, really focus on some of the real issues. And it's just been this nitpicking. The debate was a fiasco, and I've sworn off George Stephanopoulos now, or even the Channel 2 just was so biased, and issues about pins on lapels. Hillary didn't have one. McCain doesn't wear some times. I mean, they have gone out of their way, I think, and I think they're afraid of the change that's going to be coming. And I think the bulk of that change is going to be business, not the way it used to be, with large corporations running our country. And let's all remember, we're spending $338 million a day on a war we never should have gone into. And right now, the latest statistics is the veterans overseas and here in the country is averaging 18 suicides a day. We really, for the sake of the soul of our country, we need to get out of war.
Marty, thank you very much for that. A response from either of you?
Well, I think there are several aspects. One is, again, the general critique of the media for being very negative, and in this last debate being incredibly hostile to Obama. And I think I would even concur with the caller that the media in this particular case was focused on nitpicky things, and the attack was directed against Obama in certainly the most aggressive way any of the candidates have been attacked across the campaign. What I think, if you really want to be cynical, I would be cynical for slightly different reasons and maybe more consistent with what Margie said. But as long as this campaign is going on, it is very good for the business of the news stations. People are much more interested in a competitive primary than they will be once this is settled. And certainly attacking very aggressively the front runner on any kind of thing that can hurt him in some substantial way is likely to have prolonged the contest. And certainly the fact that Clinton managed a 9-some point victory in Pennsylvania has kept this going. And if basically it goes through this next phase, I suspect North Carolina will be in the Obama column, not clear by how much, but maybe double digits, very close in Indiana. If it keeps going, people the media will benefit from it. So I think we could be cynical about the media without thinking that it's entirely corrupted by things other than avarice. One point that I really think is important to make is that these two candidates are both good, and they both don't differ very much on policy, and that the world really changes as you get into the general election, where people do focus more on real issues, but that tends to occur very close to Election Day. So the dynamic of what people are thinking about is very different in October than it's going to be in May, June, July, August, and September. And then in November, people will focus even more.
And we'll have to leave it there. And I really appreciate your spending the time with us today, Margie Hershey, Professor of Political Science, Indiana University in Bloomington, George Rabinowitz, Burton Craig, Professor of Political Science at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Thanks once again. If you'd like a cassette copy, a CD of the program, it's available through the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air for producing the show, Carmen Jackson for on-air production. I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network.